Let me lay out the fact that nobody is disputing. No opinion here, just the cold hard fact. The former VP, Joe Biden, leaves office in 2017 in possession of hundreds of classified documents scattered in three different locations, including one exposed to the Chinese. And Biden, he was fully aware that he was in possession of classified documents. We have recordings that prove it. He told his biographer. His biographer interviewed him, and he said, "I found the classified documents in the garage." He handed him the documents. He said, "Be careful. They are classified. Be careful." He says, "Be careful. They are classified." Biden, for 3 years or more, never reported the possession of the classified documents. He repeatedly lied about it. First, Biden said, and this is just a few months ago, he said he didn't have any classified documents. Then he said, "Oh, well, I had classified documents, but they were secure." Then he claimed that the classified documents, that was a mistake. His staffers accidentally packed up the classified documents. He was unaware of it. Those were all lies. Those have all been debunked. And he insisted, by the way, to Robert Hur under oath, he said, "Well, yeah, I had classified information, but I was allowed to keep it," just like Ronald Reagan. He defended himself. "Well, Reagan left office and he had classified documents, and Clinton and Obama, other presidents kept theirs, so I'm allowed to keep mine." By the way, big difference. They were allowed to declassify. They were president. Trump was allowed to declassify. We're talking 2017 when Biden was not yet president. Those are all fact. It is a total disgrace. And why? Why is he not being prosecuted? Well, we know, because he's Biden and because he's a Democrat. But what's the official reason? Here's what's incredible, is that they build the narrative to fit the crime, right? So they know that he will not be charged, and they know that Trump will be charged, but it's like, well, we have to figure out an explanation that somehow fits in to the fact. So they squeeze it. It's like putting a jigsaw puzzle together. You know, when the pieces don't actually fit, they take the fact and then they work backward, and it's so egregious. And they could not come up with anything because he had intent. Remember, with Hillary Clinton, James Comey came up with her not having intent. The problem is Biden had intent, and Robert Hur admitted it. So the only option, and Hur said this 20 times, he literally concocted a bogus reason that's unheard of. He said this so many times. He said, and we're going to do a deep dive analysis of the Robert Hur testimony, give you a lot of different excerpts. We also have so much other news of the day to get to. But he said, "Well, a jury's not going to convict somebody like Biden." That was the only thing he'd come up with, is, well, there's intent. We have all the elements here. He committed the crime. He knew about it. He said, "Be careful, classified documents. But I don't think a jury's going to look at him." Like, so in other words, now that's made up. That is literally fabricated. "Well, I decided that a jury's going to look at him, and despite him being guilty, a jury's not going to see it that way. So now I get to exonerate." And he said, insisted a bunch of times, "I did not exonerate Biden." And the Democrats were livid about that. But that literally, that's the only reason. That is the only thing he could come up with. Well, Biden's too old, too goofy, too forgetful, so they're going to be too sympathetic. So that is a new get out of jail free card. If you're goofy and you're forgetful, so a jury won't convict you. I mean, literally, and he's the former VP, he's the current president. So if anybody can tell you, with these facts in place, that the system is not rigged, if anybody thinks that the system is different than the KGB, than the Soviet Union, he's old, he's forgetful. So there you go. Now, you never get charged with a crime as long as after the crime, you are old, you are forgetful, you are goofy. So the system is totally rigged. Now, there were multiple bombshells in Robert Hur's testimony, and probably, perhaps the biggest bombshell was in the transcript, not the testimony itself, but that morning of the Hur testimony, the transcript. We have a lot to get to in just a moment, but the transcript of Joe Biden's interview with the special counsel was released, and in that interview, among many other things we're going to get to, Biden said that in 2016, he was trying to excuse the fact that his memory was foggy and why he had the classified documents or whatever, and he said that in 2016, a lot of people encouraged him to run for president, except for Barack Obama. This was like a side point in his testimony, but he said, "Yeah, well, I was considering," he said, "I almost ran for president in 2016 because a lot of people encouraged me to, except for the president," meaning Obama. And he said that basically Obama told him that Hillary had a better chance. He said, "Well, Obama thought that Hillary had a better chance to win." It's literally in the transcript. So it's not relevant to the classified documents at all, but Biden, they're admitting that he was encouraged to run, decided not to, essentially because Obama thought Hillary had a better shot. And are you still going to try to tell me now that Obama's not calling the shots? It's literally right there in the transcript of Biden's interview with the special counsel. I can't believe nobody else made this point. All right, so coming up, we're going to tell you about President Biden's new budget proposal, where he wants to spend us into oblivion even more than he already is, drive us straight off the cliff. Biden's budget will increase spending and the deficit by trillions of dollars. The most amazing part is that the White House is claiming that this budget would reduce the deficit, which it will not do, but they're gaslighting, I'll explain. Plus, Iran is stockpiling huge amounts of uranium, nuclear-grade uranium, way beyond anything they've ever done. The world has basically given up. The UN has totally stopped monitoring Iran's nuclear program. There are no new sanctions being imposed. Iran is literally developing a nuke right before our eyes, and nobody is even attempting to stop it. And if Trump does not win this coming November, then nothing's going to stop Iran. We'll also tell you about the school principal in Japan who was fired and arrested for stealing coffee. Actually, really interesting story. That and much more. All right, so the media and the Democrats, they've taken gaslighting to a new level because, again, before we get to Robert Hur, remember the media reports about how Trump on January 6th, they said that Trump lunged for the steering wheel. They said that Trump on the presidential limo called the Beast, the SUV limo, He was in that limo, and they were heading to the White House, and he wanted to go to the Capitol on January 6th, and they said that he tried to commandeer the limo, grab the steering wheel away from the Secret Service. Well, that has been debunked as fake news. And we literally told you this at the time. The person, the witness who claimed that Trump tried to grab the steering wheel, lunge for the steering wheel, that witness was not in the car. That witness was claiming she heard it third hand. She was a Democrat operative, a former Trump aide, but she literally threw Trump under the bus. And it turns out it's fake news, as we said at the time. Cassidy Hutchinson, remember her? Former Trump aide. She said Trump lunged at the steering wheel to drive to the Capitol. Well, that has been contradicted. Not that has been. That was contradicted by Trump's own Secret Service driver 2 years ago, during the January 6th hearings. They had testimony where they knew that this was debunked, and they buried it. They covered it up. It was suppressed by the January 6th committee. And now a lot of that testimony, bombshell testimony, is being released by the Republicans, who now have access to it. So President Trump never lunged for the steering wheel in the presidential Beast limo January 6th, 2021. That's according to his own driver. This is detailed testimony. And they knew this years ago. They never reported anything about it. And even now, when the media at the time, I mean, this literally captivated the whole country for about 2 days in the news cycle. All anybody talked about was Trump lunging for the steering wheel, this bombshell testimony by Cassidy Hutchinson with no basis whatsoever. And she was not even there. And we said at the time, we said there is no basis. She is making it up. And they knew, they said nothing. And now we all know. The Secret Service driver, he told investigators, quote, "I did not see him reach. He never grabbed the steering wheel. I did not see him lunge to try to get to the front seat at all. What stood out was the irritation in his voice more than his physical presence." This was the driver. He said the president was insistent on going to the Capitol. It was clear that he wanted to go. He was not screaming. Certainly his voice was raised, but it did not seem to me that he was irate. Certainly not. He was not irate or agitated. So that contradicts Cassidy Hutchinson's third-hand testimony when she bizarrely claimed, oh, Trump lunged for the steering wheel and then used his free hand to lunge towards Bobby Engel. That was fabricated. Of course, the mainstream media is never going to tell you this, never going to issue a retraction after all the damage that they did. In addition, the bogus January 6th committee suppressed other testimony that confirms, or at least strongly suggests and strongly reaffirms what Trump has claimed, that he requested 10,000 National Guard troops for the Capitol on January 6th. Remember, the Democrats set the whole thing up. And by the way, Trump didn't know that at the time. He said, well, why did he want to go to the Capitol January 6th? He wanted to go because he wanted to join the protesters. Remember, he was encouraging them on Twitter. He was encouraging them to protest peacefully. He said, keep it peaceful. He said it more than once. He didn't know that the Democrats were going to set up for a violent breach of the Capitol. He never expected that to happen. So he thought he was going to go and rally his people in a peaceful way. But the other part of this is the National Guard troops. Trump has said many, many times, I requested 10,000 National Guard troops. And he says he was shot down. Nancy Pelosi, they refused to carry it out. And of course, we know why. So now we know that there's testimony. Remember, the Democrats over and over again said there's no evidence that Trump asked for 10,000 National Guard troops. Yes, there is. In fact, again, there is testimony, but the Democrats suppressed that testimony. They lied about this. Trump, he insisted many, many times that he requested this. So according to the newly released transcripts by the Republicans, an interview with Trump's former White House Deputy Chief of Staff, Anthony Ornato, his testimony proves what Mark Meadows said, by the way. Mark Meadows said this a bunch of times. He was the chief of staff, that Trump requested 10,000 National Guard troops. So he was asked by January 6th committee, Quote, when it comes to the National Guard statement about 10,000 troops, do you recall any discussion prior to January 6th about whether and how many National Guard troops to deploy on January 6th? Ornato responded that there was a phone call with Mark Meadows, Trump's chief of staff, who phoned D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser, a radical leftist woke liberal. And he said, then I remember the chief, meaning Mark Meadows, the chief asking... He said that he asked her about 10,000 National Guard troops. He said Mark Meadows said that Trump was willing to ask for 10,000 National Guard troops. Mark Meadows literally told that to the D.C. mayor. And then Bowser responded, we only have 350 or so troops for intersection control, and they were not law enforcement capacity. And he says, and then I remember the chief telling Christopher Miller, acting Secretary of Defense, get them in here to secure the Capitol now. So literally, again, Liz Cheney and the bogus January 6th committee, they said multiple times, no evidence that Trump called for 10,000 National Guard troops. They had testimony that proves the opposite, and they suppressed it. In other news, Dollar Tree is closing down about 1,000 stores, okay? The Dollar Tree store, which is very popular in a lot of circles. A lot of people like the Dollar Tree store because everything there costs, well, not a dollar anymore. It did under Trump. It cost a dollar. Under Biden, everything costs, virtually everything, costs $1.25. So they should call it $1.25 store. That is Biden's legacy, that he made all the prices go up. Well, Dollar Tree is closing down 1,000 stores because apparently those stores are not profitable. And again, that is clearly thanks to Biden. That's another casualty, that these stores cannot remain profitable in a lot of, I guess they run by margin. So I guess if they have a lot of volume, then they can make money. But very, very sad that Dollar Tree is closing down. And you know what's amazing? And think about this, because it shows you the hypocrisy of the left, of Biden and the Democrats, is do you know who the predominant people who patronize Dollar Tree are? The predominant, the customers that predominantly patronize Dollar Tree, predominantly shop there, are people of color, not colored people, but people of color. Wouldn't you think, you know, I don't want to say anything controversial. So it's people of color. I don't want to flip those words around. Now, wouldn't you think that liberals, right, they fight for the minorities, right? They fight to give minorities all sorts of free stuff, right? All sorts of the free programs, right? Food stamps and Medicaid and everything else. Wouldn't you think that since who's benefiting the most? Blacks, Hispanics, minorities are benefiting from these Dollar Trees. They're in those neighborhoods for the most part, low-income neighborhoods. The minority people of color are the ones who are gaining the most. They shop there the most, so they're getting cheaper items. However Dollar Tree manages to do it, they're getting cheaper items at Dollar Tree. So this is benefiting them. So the liberals are the ones who claim to care about minorities. Well, instead of handing them out, you know, free government programs and government money and free food stamps, here you have a store which sells it to these people, but it sells it much cheaper. So wouldn't you think they would fight to keep prices low and to keep stores like Dollar Tree open and keep prices at a dollar, not a $1.25 tree? And the answer is they don't care about minorities. When they claim to care about minorities, right, they only do it to promote socialist programs. It's only if it helps them have more government control, more government handouts. It's only if they can increase government spending and say, well, we need to increase food stamps, Medicaid, and all these other entitlements. We need to give it to the minorities. But so blacks being poor, that actually helps the Democrat agenda, because now more food stamps, more social program, more government spending, more socialism. But if they could actually help a private company, right? If the way you solve poverty in the black community is through capitalism, is through helping a company make more profits, then the liberals would rather shut down the store and make the blacks suffer. Think about that. Think about that hypocrisy. All right, attention all criminals. If you want to commit crimes and you don't want the police to get in the way, go to Pittsburgh. You see, in New York, obviously criminals, they get to roam the streets and they get out of jail about 10 minutes after they get put in, because in New York, they get released without bail. But there's the nuisance. Remember, you do get arrested occasionally in New York City. So that's a nuisance, where the police come, they arrest you, put you in handcuffs, you're in a holding cell for a couple of hours, and then you get released without bail. It's very inconvenient. That's a couple of hours of your life that you wish you had back when you were busy getting arrested and going in jail. Well, in Pittsburgh, don't worry, because for multiple hours in the middle of the night, by the way, the scariest time, I mean, you would argue that it's in some ways it is the most dangerous time of day, which is 3 a.m. to 7 a.m., the police in Pittsburgh are going to be off. They're just they're not even going to show up. They're given time off. Pittsburgh somehow is making these major cuts, major slashes. We told you about this a few weeks ago, but it's more frightening than we ever imagined. Beginning on Monday, big changes coming to the Pittsburgh Bureau of Police, Police Department. Personnel will be transitioning from the traditional 8-hour work days to 4 10-hour shifts with 3 consecutive days off. Basically, they're giving police a lot more days off. And instead of responding to 200,000 calls, which is what they've done, they're only going to be responding to 50,000 calls. So literally, Pittsburgh is now slashing its police response by 75%. This is horrific. How does anybody live in Pittsburgh? Buy weapons if you live in Pittsburgh. The remaining 150,000 calls that are not going to go to police are going to go to a telephone reporting unit, online reporting. So it's like, you're being burglarized, press 1, press 2, you'll leave a message, and we'll get back to you as soon as we can. This is insanity. The things that are going on that we have never seen in our lifetime. Police Chief Larry Sirotto, he says the change is an effort to increase officer wellness, which is his priority. Officer wellness, what about people wellness? What about wellness of the victims? What about wellness of people who are having a break-in at 4 in the morning and they call up the operator and it's like calling CVS when you have to, well, press 2 for burglary and press 3 for car theft and press 4 for drunk driving? I mean, the officer wellness, I have an idea. Let's send all the officers to Hawaii. Let's send all the officers to Tahiti and give them all tequilas. And you know what? Party time in Pittsburgh for the criminals, because all the officers are, they're getting really, really well. The officers are doing great. Hey, you know, how are the officers doing? Well, you know, since we sent them on a free vacation and pay them to sit on the beach all day, they're doing wonderfully. Well, how are the criminals doing? Well, the criminals are having a party. Well, how are the victims doing? Not very good. But there's officer wellness. There's no victim wellness, but that's okay. This is lunacy like we have never. You read the story and you're wishing maybe it's Babylon Bee. Pittsburgh police officers, for the sake of their wellness, are going to be off from 3 a.m. to 7 a.m., given lots more off time. Press 3 to leave a message. You know, press 4 to speak to the pharmacist, who you're more likely to get on the phone a CVS pharmacist than you are a cop. And by the way, it's not so easy to get through to a CVS pharmacist. I try all the time. So here's what Chief Sirota said: an additional day a week from work each week to focus on family, friends, or outside pursuits is key to creating a healthy workforce and contributes to the Bureau's goal for not only recruiting new officers, but retaining them for the long haul. So this is about officer recruitment. By the way, why are they having so much trouble recruiting police in a lot of these cities? Because they defunded the police, because they cut the budgets, because they used the budgets instead for minority programs, okay? So now they can't recruit police because police have no interest in working for pennies. So that's really the problem. So the way they solve that is, well, just give the police more time off, and then they're going to want to work. You see how circular, how insane it is? So, he says, what did he say? He says, gives cops more time to focus on family, friends, or outside pursuits. Anything but the criminals. It's just bizarre. And there's going to be no police, no officers. There are 6 police stations in Pittsburgh. Between 3 a.m. and 7 a.m., there will not be officers at any of the 6 police stations. And they're announcing this, by the way. So criminals, in case you thought they were going to, like, be a little secretive to not let you know, they're telling you, please commit crimes between 3 a.m. and 7 a.m. There's going to be, if somebody wants to, I don't know what this means, but if somebody needs to call the cops, there are newly installed call boxes. The night shift will consist of only 20 officers patrolling the entire city, but nobody at an actual police station. All right, let's get to the Robert Hurt testimony. There's a lot to dive into here, and we're going to get into a little detail because I think it's very important, the Robert Hurt testimony. I was not able, we wanted to kind of play you some clips. It's just too complicated to set that up. I'm going to play you Matt Gaetz's questioning. Was really, Congressman Matt Gaetz of Florida, he was really, to me, the Republicans, I was not terribly impressed. I didn't feel they really knew the questions to ask, some of them better than others. The Democrats were, it was like comical. I mean, seeing the Democrats, I don't know who was more upset with Robert Hur, the Republicans or the Democrats. The Democrats were angry. And it's like, he exonerated your guy, okay? Trump is charged with 40 counts, and Biden's exonerated, and that's still not enough, because the reason he exonerated is because Biden's forgetful. And that really, really annoyed the Democrats. Jerry Nadler, Adam Schiff, like, they're furious. They're living at Robert Hur. He exonerated him. You guys should be thanking him. Now, what's incredible is that, you know, Robert Hur, the Democrats, why are they angry at Hur? They said, well, he used negative rhetoric, and he used vicious rhetoric in his, he went too far, he got carried away, crossed the line. You know, yeah, you can exonerate Biden and you can blame it on his mental cognitive abilities, but you should go easy on Biden. You shouldn't talk about his forgetfulness and forgetting when his son died. By the way, we now have the transcript that proved, remember, he said that Robert Hur in his report explaining why he exonerated, he said Biden is very forgetful and he didn't remember the year that his son Beau died. And Joe Biden was furious. President Biden got up that night after it was released and he held a press conference and he said, how dare he even ask him about that? He had no right to ask him about his son's death. And the transcript proves that was a lie. And what happened was Biden himself brought up, because he was trying to explain why he was being so forgetful, his memory so cloudy, he tried using his son as an excuse, which made no sense because his son died years before the classified document scandal took place. But that was the point. The point was that he couldn't remember. He's sitting there trying to remember when his son died, and he had brought it up. Her did not bring that up, and Biden's acting like her was so disgraceful in bringing it up. So that was one bombshell that, you know, that we already that we found out from the transcript. But what's incredible is that, you know, the Democrats are saying, well, Hur should have been not as graphic and not as detailed when he was describing Biden's level of forgetfulness. And Robert Hur strongly defended it. He said, you don't understand. I have a crime here that took place. Think about this. Robert Hur, he had so much trouble because he has to acquit, right? Everyone knows he has to exonerate. He's saying he didn't exonerate. But for all practical purposes, it's an exoneration. Biden's not getting charged. I like that he said that. He said, Pramila Jayapal, that was one of the bombshells. She yelled, Biden exonerated. You exonerated Biden. And Robert Hur said multiple times, and he was pretty calm. You know, he did not get very agitated or very tense throughout the entire testimony. But at that point, he was much stronger. And he said, no, I did not exonerate. She kept saying, well, you exonerated. And he kept going back, I did not exonerate. We didn't use that word once in the report. And what he's trying to say there is Biden committed the crime over and over again. It's the same theme. He committed the crime. He knew he committed the crime. He had intent. The whole cooperation stuff about how Biden cooperated, Trump didn't cooperate. Number one, it's not true, because that's not called cooperating. We'll get to that in a moment. But number two, Hur never mentioned that part, because cooperation, that's only about obstruction. It doesn't change the crime, right? You rob a bank, you steal $1 million. Okay, a week later, the cops come, they find you. Hey, you have $1 million you stole from the bank. And you say, oh, I'm sorry. Here, officer, here's $1 million back. Oh, okay, well, then you could just walk away, because you cooperated. It's totally, totally made up. Again, they take the facts and they figure out a way that can somehow add up to the narrative, to the result that they want to add up to. So Robert Hur, he kept saying, I have to talk about how forgetful he is, because do you know how hard, what Robert is really saying there is, you know how hard it is to acquit this man? Every element of the crime is there. So the only way I can acquit him is by going to an extreme of how forgetful he is, so that a jury's going to basically have no choice but to acquit, which is still a lie. But like, he has to bend over backward and do contortions in order to even get through this lie of, oh, Biden's not convictable. So this is the only time in history that a president of a certain party was not charged with a crime, and the people in his own party are livid at the prosecutor who exonerated, or at least declined to charge their guy. So it really is astonishing watching this. And again, I want to go through, this is one of the most egregious crimes you can commit, and I want to explain why. Because unlike Trump, Trump's classified documents, number one, he declassified them as president. At least that's what everything indicates. Number two, Biden had no right to do that. Number two, you know, Trump didn't leave his documents in a garage with a Corvette with access to Hunter Biden, who took millions of dollars from China, who has the Chinese Communist government on speed dial. Number two, the Penn Biden Center, where literally the Chinese have access. They are donors to the Penn Biden Center. So Trump's documents, number one, were declassified. Number two, were in a much safer place. But here you have an egregious crime where top secret documents about Afghanistan and other sensitive matters removed from the White House or wherever Biden kept them, left in a garage, office access. I mean, it's unbelievable. All right, so let's get to all the bombshells that came out, either came out of the testimony or came out of the transcript, which was released that morning, of Biden speaking with the special counsel. Number one, the biographer. Do you know he deleted the recordings of his interview with Biden? The biographer took recordings of his interview with Biden when he was writing his book, his memoir. And after, not before, but after the investigation was launched, Matt Gaetz asked the Robert Hur point blank. He said, why did you not charge? Why did you not indict the biographer? The biographer, what is he also old and forgetful? Is he also senile? But he was never indicted. Another bombshell. Biden said to the biographer, I mentioned this earlier, here are the documents. I found the classified documents in the garage. Be careful because they may be classified. So there's the intent, okay? The notion that he didn't have intent, he's telling the biographer, be careful with the classified documents. What is he trying to say there? He knows that he's committing a crime and it's illegal for him to have these, and certainly to show them to somebody else. Biden also revealed, by the way, in the testimony of the special counsel in the transcript, that the documents were confidential, but he insisted that he had a right to keep them. And that contradicts, he keeps saying that the reason that his case is different than Trump's case is because he cooperated. But then when he spoke to Robert Hur, he said, they're my notes because they were classified documents that he had written in his notebook, which is also classified, and you're not allowed to keep them. And he said, no, they're my property. Well, what happened? What about cooperation? And like I said, the whole notion of cooperating is absurd. I mean, and so who knows what kind of damage is done? Hunter Biden, James Biden, and by extension, the Chinese government had access to top secret information. The report says that Biden, now what was Biden's motivation, by the way, to keep these documents? So it's actually in the report, and Jim Jordan asked Robert Hur about this, and he confirmed this. Two motivations. Number one, he was writing a book. It was this book. And what's amazing is this, the memoirs, and the reason he needed top secret classified documents about Afghanistan is because Biden had a lot of disagreements and disputes with Obama and with people in the White House about how to approach Afghanistan, about when they should do a pullout, and about the Osama bin Laden raid, which Joe Biden was opposed to the Osama bin Laden raid, believe it or not. So he needed to write a book, and therefore he needed to prove he was right about Afghanistan, so he needed to take all this classified information home with him. That was his motivation, to the extent that Robert Hur, in the report, he wrote how much money. He wrote that Biden generated $8 million in sales with this book. So he actually put a motive of why Biden took home these documents was to make $8 million. And also, in addition, he added another motive, which was personal advancement, because he wanted to run for president. So he literally was irresponsible with classified documents, risked the national security of the country. That's our current president. To make millions and for his own personal advancement to run for president. Jerry Nadler, this was one of the most stunning moments of the entire testimony. Jerry Nadler innocently asked, not that anything Jerry Nadler does is innocent, but he didn't expect the answer that he got. He asked Robert Hur, he said, at any point, did you have any reason to believe that President Biden was lying to you or misleading to you when he testified? And Robert Hur said back, well, yeah. He said, yes. He says, you look at the report, we say that there are things that he says that, you know, Robert Hur has his, like, legalese way of couching it. So he doesn't say lying. That was another thing that Matt Gaetz said. Well, I'll read you a lot of the Matt Gaetz excerpts in a moment. And then I hope at the end of the show, I may have mentioned this earlier, at the end of the show, I hope that I'll just play the entire Matt Gaetz 5 minutes of questioning of Robert Hur, because he really did a very, very solid job of bringing out the points. A lot of the Republicans, I just wasn't impressed. I just didn't think they got Robert Hur to say anything. They didn't really get the points across in a clear way. Like, they, you know, here you have so much damage being done to Biden, and you have the man there for a few minutes, you know, get him to speak up, and he didn't, and Matt Gaetz did. And so that's what I want to play at the end of the show. But Nadler said, if any reason Biden was lying, and in his own way, Robert Hur said, yes, we make that point in the transcript. Now, it's not clear where Biden was actually lying, but here's what I think. Because what happened was, in the transcript, Biden told interviewers that he did not intend to keep any classified documents. Here's what he said. He said, quote, I had no purpose for them. I think it would be inappropriate for me to keep clear the classified documents. And he said it was his staff that packed his belongings. He said, I don't want to hold them responsible or get them in trouble, but I believe they were the ones who decided where things should go. So essentially, when he spoke to Robert Hur, he said, oh, well, it wasn't me. I had no knowledge of it. But the problem is, number one, like I said, he had the motive. And number two, he handed it. Then they discovered, and the recordings were deleted by the biographer, but they found transcripts of the recording, thankfully. So they were able to discover that Biden actually said to the biographer, he said, oh, by the way, I found the classified stuff. And here, be careful because they're classified. Well, 1 second. I thought it was your staff and you didn't know anything about it. So that's what I would imagine is the lie that Robert Hur is referring to. In addition, Biden accused Trump of being irresponsible with top secret documents and endangering national security. The Hur report says that applies equally to Biden and Trump. He literally said, he said that the danger and the risk to national security, there's no difference between Biden and Trump. The report also, Hur's report also said that, you know, one of the reasons he chose not to charge Biden, he says that Biden is unlikely to be a repeat offender. He says, you know, you might want to charge him as a deterrent factor because you want to prevent him from doing this again. No, he's not likely to be a repeat offender. He does not say why. So one of the congressmen asked him, on what basis? Why do you say that Biden is unlikely to repeat the crime? And Hur sat there silent. He had no answer. Why do you say that Biden has no, is not likely to become a repeat offender and to mishandle classified documents again? The congressman said back, he said the only reason is because now he's the president. He said there's no logical reason why Biden wouldn't do this again. So the only reason is because as the president, he can just declassify anything that he wants. So how insane is that? How insane is that? Look at that circular logic. Well, one reason we might want to indict Biden is because we want to deter him from doing this again. But that's not likely to happen. Well, why is it likely to happen? He did it for years, and he didn't bother telling anybody until his lawyers discovered it and reported it to the archives and to the FBI. So, of course he would do it again. Well, no, he's not going to do it again because now he's the president. So now if he shares it, by definition, he's declassifying, which, by the way, is exactly what Trump did. So think about that. Imagine we take a spy, and the spy is elected president, and now the spy, because he's president, is unlikely to mishandle classified documents because he's able to just declassify them and basically share a secrets with the Russians and the Chinese and the Iranians. It's insane. All right, so McClintock, Congressman McClintock, one of the first people to question, Republican congressman, to question her, he made a great point. You know, he said that you, Robert Hur, have given the formula to any criminal. He said, I can take home top secret documents. I can share them with people, reveal whatever's in them, keep them scattered all over my house, my office. And I can say, hey, I just found the classified stuff, right? I could do all of that. And then you come to me and you ask me about it. And I say, well, you know what? I don't remember. And you sit there just talking about how you don't remember it. And you act all sympathetic and you act all smiley and friendly and nice. And, you know, just keep talking about how you don't remember, which, by the way, every witness says always. And he says, and then you get exonerated. So this is an absolute disgrace that they are not charging Biden. And it's even a bigger disgrace that they're not charging Biden and they're charging Trump. And they did the exact same thing, only you can make so many arguments why what Biden did is so much worse. Now, Matt Gaetz really, you know, he nailed it. So let me read you here a lot of the Matt Gaetz questioning. I'll just read it to you. And then, like I said, we'll play it at the end. He said, why did you share classified information with your ghostwriter? The president said, I did not share classified information. I'm sorry, this was not in the testimony. This was what Biden was asked at the White House when he held the press conference. He was asked, why did you share classified information February 8th? And he said, I guarantee I did not. And he said to her, Matt Gaetz says to her, is that true, what Biden said? So her says back, that is inconsistent with the findings based on the evidence. So Gaetz says back, it's a lie, right? That's what regular people would say, right? Because he doesn't talk like regular people. And again, you know, he was a calm, I'm personally very, very, I don't know if disgusted is too strong a word, but I find what her is doing abhorrent, because even though he comes across as, you know, with all the legal stuff and he talks all polished and he presents it all in a very professional, polished way, what he's really doing is he's saying, I know this man committed a crime. It's an egregious crime. Trump is getting charged with the same thing for the same thing, but a jury wouldn't convict him. He's old and he's goofy and come up with, I mean, that is so disingenuous, so dishonest that Robert Hur is so fake. And he's such a phony. And how do you live with yourself? So I find it disgraceful and despicable. But he doesn't talk English, right? So Gaetz says, is it true when Biden claims, well, I never had classified documents? And Gaetz says back, Hur says back, it's inconsistent with the findings. That's how he answered every question, right? So Gaetz says, what regular people would call that is a lie, right? And Hur kind of like smiled and kind of accepted that and agreed to it. And then Matt Gaetz says, so the next one, all the stuff that was in my home was in filing cabinets that were either locked or able to be locked. That was not true either, was it? And Hur says, that was inconsistent with the findings of our investigation. And Gaetz says, oh, another lie, right? That's what people would call it, right? They've called it a lie. He says, you've put in your report, among the places Biden's lawyers found classified documents was in the garage, was a damaged open box in the garage. So he said, you find in your reports that the elements of a federal criminal violation are met, but then you apply this senile cooperator theory. That was the senile cooperator theory. That was how Matt Gaetz termed it. And he says, and Matt Gaetz says, I don't think you get to the right answer in that Biden, I don't think, he says you get to the right answer because Biden should not have been charged, but Trump also should not have been charged. But under the senile cooperator theory, it's frustrating that Biden continues to go out and lie about the basic facts. That was Matt Gaetz's point. His point was, you know, you're calling him the senile cooperator and you're letting him go, but he's still lying. He was literally lying 2 weeks ago. lying 2 weeks ago. And then Matt Gaetz says, he says, the senile cooperator theory, the fact that Joe Biden is so inept in responding, you cannot prove his intent. He says, I don't quibble with that conclusion, but it's frustrating to me. Oh, well, this guy is not getting treated the same way as Trump because the elevator is not going to the top floor. So he cannot prove intent. And then Biden goes to the White House and he lies. And he says, well, you know, he just blatantly lies. And what I'm trying to figure out is whether or not Biden is lying because he's still so senile that he hasn't read your report, or whether it's a little craftier and a little more devious and perhaps a little more intentional than we might otherwise think. And then he asked him about the Penn Biden Center. And he says, did you have concern that the Penn Biden Center, where all the classified stuff was being mishandled, was floated by foreign governments? And Hearst says, we were concerned with getting to the bottom of all the classified documents. You know, so Gaetz says, he says, well, listen, the money paying for this place was where the documents were being inappropriately held. That was Chinese and other foreign countries. Did that play into your analysis? Did you look into the billions of dollars in foreign funding sources at the Penn Biden Center? And Hearst says back, we conducted a thorough investigation. We were very concerned getting to the bottom of all the relevant. Gaetz says, did you look into the fact that the Chinese were floating the place where this guy was keeping the documents? Yes or no? So he says, to the extent that we identified evidence that was relevant, we put in our reports. And Matt Gaetz says, well, it seems relevant to me, maybe not to you. In other words, what Robert Hur is saying is, well, we didn't find it relevant that the Chinese are spending millions and millions of dollars on the Penn Biden Center and they have access to the Biden documents. And Hearst says, well, it's not relevant. And Gaetz says, well, it seems pretty relevant to me. And then, as I said, he asked him, why did they not charge the ghostwriter with obstructing justice and deleting evidence? Because that's what he did. He literally, after the investigation, he had it for years. He had this recording, and then he deleted the recording. So Hearst says back, he says, when we interviewed the ghostwriter, he says, one of the things was, he was aware about the special counsel. So Gaetz says, so the ghostwriter deleted the recordings. He says he didn't just delete them out of happenstance. He deleted them because Biden's admitting the crimes. So he's obstructing justice. So Hearst says back, we didn't obstruct him because we still found transcripts of the recording. So even though there's no recording, we still found transcripts of the recording. So Gaetz says back, so if you destroy some evidence but not other evidence, that somehow absolves you of the evidence that you destroy. That somehow absolves you of the crime. And it's unbelievable, because it's a great point by Matt Gaetz that nobody else thought of over here, including myself, is why on earth are they not charging the ghostwriter with a crime? It is completely, completely disgraceful. And, you know, if Trump ever gets elected, you have to believe that they can revisit all of these crimes. What else here? Again, back to the transcript, Joe Biden, the interview with Robert Hur, he said that Bo Biden, he thought, was alive in 2017 or 2018. But of course, Bo Biden died in 2015. He also forgot the year that Trump was elected president. All right. So there's your Robert Hur testimony in a nutshell. And like I said, it's frustrating. It is what it is. We've come to expect it. And hopefully, at the very least, Trump gets exonerated on his charges, which I expect that to happen. Except you never know, because, you know, some of the jurors are in Washington, D.C. One of the juries is, for that trial, is going to be in Washington, D.C. And that's a disaster for Trump. Those people can't stand Trump. I mean, they voted for Haley over Trump, the few that may happen to be Republicans. All right, a caller said, speaking of Nikki Haley, a caller made the point that Nikki Haley benefited Trump's campaign, because, very interesting, because she kind of played the role of the villain. You know, when somebody's running unopposed, or when the opposition is very weak, that kind of, people lose the enthusiasm. You know, it's not exactly the underdog factor, because I don't think anybody would call Trump an underdog with the, you know, his dominating the polls. But it you always need like a contrast. If it's just somebody running against themselves, it doesn't rally people. It doesn't get people excited and enthusiastic. So Nikki Haley, by playing the role of the villain, she actually probably benefited Trump, which is really interesting. And it's a great point. You know, the caller said that probably wasn't Nikki Haley's motivation, but it did kind of, it was a side benefit. So that's always true, by the way. You know, they find this true in business as well, where people want an alternative. If there's like a product out there or a service, or there's a business that's offering something, even though that thing could be really glitzy and a really cool, exciting thing, if there's nothing to contrast it to, they always want some other product that's maybe not as good. There are companies that sometimes will even create like two products, the one that's better and one that's worse, just in order to basically get people to buy the better one. Because if they, why wouldn't they just make the better one? Well, maybe they can expand their sales, but that's not always the reason. Sometimes it's just to position one of the products as the better product. And by people having a contrast, psychologically, they root for and they get more excited, which is pretty amazing. And there is a story, you know, that, you know, at one point, people don't realize this, because now Apple obviously is one of the largest companies on the planet, if not the biggest. And Microsoft is nowhere near what Apple, Microsoft's still pretty, you know, pretty successful, but it's nowhere near what Apple is. However, you know, that all really came about with the iPod and the iPhone. People don't remember this, but in the 1990s, Apple was basically dead in the water, dead and buried. In the 1990s, Microsoft, remember Windows, there was Windows 95, Windows 98, and Windows ruled the world. There was no such thing, you know, cell phones in the mid-90s were still pretty new and not very popular, and Apple didn't make any cell phones, neither did Microsoft, but desktop computers, laptop computers, those were big. There was no such thing as an iPad, there was no such thing as a tablet in the mid-90s. So Microsoft ruled the world, and Bill Gates ruled the world, and Steve Jobs was out of Apple and basically wanted to get back in, believe it or not, and Apple was really, really, you know, nobody had really heard of Apple in the mid-90s. I know it's hard to believe looking back. So Steve Jobs at one point needed money. He needed like an investment, and he actually went to Bill Gates, even though they were really competitors, fierce competitors in the early 90s, and kind of Microsoft kind of knocked Apple out, and Steve Jobs was taken off the board, exiled for a while, without getting into all the business history here. But the point is that Microsoft lent Apple the money, and it turned out, arguably, it came back to hurt Microsoft because Apple ended up becoming so much bigger. But what's interesting is he lent him the money, and the reason, the theory is, why would he lend his big competitor the money? And it's because he actually wanted to prop him up. Microsoft always feared that if Apple would become obsolete, then that would hurt Microsoft because there'd be no alternative option. All right, enough of the business lesson here. I want to clarify something. I mentioned, I think last time, that I don't believe that a VP pick can usually help a president get votes. I just don't believe that a running mate really can increase votes, at least by anything substantial. And, you know, somebody emailed me when we were talking about, you know, I want to be clear that they can hurt. I think it can damage. You know, I didn't mean to say can't help but cannot hurt either. I meant to say cannot help but can hurt. That's why I believe in taking a very neutral VP, very neutral running mate, which is what Trump did with Mike Pence. It's what Hillary did with, I think, Tim Kaine at the time. Biden did not do that, but that was a different story. You know, Biden needed to pick a black woman, of course. Doesn't matter whether she qualifies or not, which he clearly does not. Worst VP pick in history, and so on and so forth. So, you know, I believe that a running mate can do damage, but doesn't really help you. So if they're not going to vote for you, it's not like, well, he has that great running mate, now I'm going to vote for him. That's my theory anyway, my belief. But you can do damage. So, for example, somebody suggested maybe Trump could pick a Democrat. If there's a Democrat who's very popular, maybe that could somehow appeal to people who don't like Biden. You know, voters don't like Biden. I think that would be very risky. And I think that could hurt Trump with his base. So, you know, but it's an interesting debate. But so I just want to clarify, just because a VP cannot help doesn't mean a VP cannot hurt. A caller asked me, what is Trump's view about the war, Israeli war in Gaza? And has Trump really spoken out about it? And he's been relatively quiet about it. And, you know, look, generally, candidates, they don't want to get too controversial. I mean, Trump's a pretty controversial person, and he's not afraid of saying things that are incendiary to get people riled up. But, I can understand why, you know, something that's very, very hot-button issue, Trump wouldn't want to comment too much. But he did comment about it. Trump was on Fox News a couple of weeks ago, and they asked him about his views on the Israel war. He said, quote, you've got to finish the problem. He came out very pro-Israel, staunchly, as we would expect. You've got to finish the problem. You had a horrible invasion that took place that never would have happened if I was president. And when he asked if he supported a ceasefire in Gaza, he kind of avoided taking any kind of strong position. So, again, you know, I don't think I really can blame him for that, but we know where Trump stands. And, yes, not only would it not have happened if he was president, it did not happen if he was president. It happened strategically before the November election because they knew that this is Israel at its most vulnerable and Iran at its strongest and the wealthiest it's been in years thanks to Joe Biden. All right, so let's talk about the budget, Biden's budget plan a little bit here. He released a budget plan on Monday. It's never gonna pass. And what they keep doing is they keep passing the Nancy Pelosi budget. No exaggeration. They literally are still doing this continuing resolution because they can't agree on any new spending bills. So they just keep the old spending levels, which is very, very, very upsetting, very egregious because it just keeps raising the deficit and we're just borrowing more and more money. They should cut spending because Republicans are in charge of the House, but they don't have the courage to shut down the government. Anyway, so here's what it would do. It would increase taxes, of course. It would increase federal spending to unprecedented levels, and it would lock in budget deficits, about $2 trillion a year for the next 10 years of budget deficits. And that's not the craziest part. The craziest part is the White House is saying this is fiscal restraint. The White House is saying we are actually cutting spending and we're actually showing fiscal restraint. And what they're doing is they're raising spending, increasing spending to levels that we could not ever imagine. They're saying, and this is gaslighting, they're saying that this budget would cut the deficit by $3 trillion over the next 10 years. But the problem is it would not cut the spending. They're saying that the spending would be paid for. But it's not paid for. It's not paid for. Because what's incredible is it's only paid for if we keep borrowing at the level we're borrowing. They're taking the amount that we're borrowing and they're including that in the projection. So it's just insanity. So here, for fiscal year 2025, which begins October of this year, Biden's asking Congress for $7 trillion and the government will only collect $5 trillion. We're going to have to borrow $2 trillion. Literally, that's paid for. He's saying that it's paid for. So how does the White House say that it's $3 trillion in deficit reduction when they're actually doing $2 trillion a year increase of the deficit? And the answer is because they're comparing Biden's 10-year budget with the current baseline projection for deficits. In other words, what they're saying is that even though we're going to keep running deficit and deficit and deficit, but if you take the current baseline for deficits, they're projecting even higher deficits. So they're going to lower the deficit. It's just insane. I don't want to get into the weeds here, but it's just insane. Inflation in February was higher than expected. What a shock. They keep telling us inflation is going down. Inflation is not going down. Biden said recently that he never should have invaded Ukraine. The United States never should have invaded Ukraine in order to hunt for bin Laden. Biden was interviewed, I think, on NBC News, and he said, quote, America made a mistake. We went after bin Laden till we got him, but we should not have gone into Ukraine. I mean, excuse me, we should not have gone into Iraq and Afghanistan. So, you know, we did not go into Ukraine or invade Ukraine. That would have been Putin. And Osama bin Laden was nowhere near Ukraine, unless Biden knows something we don't know. But what's incredible is he said it wasn't necessary. It caused more problems than it raised. Now, number one, we didn't go into Iraq to get bin Laden. We went to Iraq for a whole different reason. We went to Afghanistan for bin Laden. But when he says that we should not have gone into Afghanistan because that caused more problems, I mean, that's disgraceful. I mean, that was literally post 9/11. Number one, he voted for it, but so did everyone. He's unanimous. It was like the only unanimous vote I've ever seen in my lifetime was to invade Afghanistan in retaliation. Now, they could have handled the whole Afghanistan situation better. That's a topic for a different day. But Biden saying that, and he has to say that now because he's upset that Israel is doing the same thing. And remember, Biden was the one who was against the bin Laden raid, and that's very consistent. And that was also a terrible, terrible decision on his part, terrible advice that he gave to Obama. Thankfully, he wasn't the one in the driver's seat. Peter Navarro has been ordered to report to prison. Now, Peter Navarro did nothing wrong. He invoked executive privilege. We now know that the January 6th committee was totally politicized. It was bogus. It was as bogus as could be. They produced videos that were made by an ABC News producer. The January 6th committee was all about smoke and mirrors, a dog and pony show to try to make Trump look bad. It was a total disgrace. And Peter Navarro said he could not cooperate and he invoked executive privilege because he was a top advisor to Trump. And he's going to jail because he is associated with Trump. Iran continues to stockpile uranium, as I said, and build more centrifuges. I'm talking about highly enriched uranium, nuclear capable uranium. And basically the IAEA, the UN watchdog, they are saying that they give up. Rafael Grossi, who's the head of IAEA, he should not be. He should be forced out immediately. He expressed concern that they've lost continuity of knowledge about Iran's production and stockpiling of centrifuges, rotors, heavy water uranium. They literally have no clue. Iran is advancing their nuclear program faster than we ever imagined. They have no idea. They are totally not monitoring it. The Russian delegate to the IAEA, Mikhail Ulyanov, he blamed it on the United States, and he says that the United States is taking risks and the whole situation is out of control. He's actually right. See, the Russians use this as propaganda. They say, oh, Biden cares about Ukraine. Why does he not care about Iran? But they're right. Biden is the reason that Iran is managed because Biden's not imposing any sanctions. He's giving them billions, letting them get away with it, and he's not enforcing anything. And you'll say, well, you know, Trump pulled out of the Iran nuclear deal. It doesn't matter. The deal is still in place. The Europeans are still part of the deal, and we have a right to enforce it because nobody else is, that's for sure. So that's a disaster. And finally, a middle school principal in Japan was fired. What he did was multiple times he paid, and this is interesting, I'll tell you why. He paid for a small coffee, took a large one. And so he paid 75 cents for the coffee. But then he took a large coffee, which cost $1.25, and he did this at least seven times. And he was fired, and he was arrested, and he lost his teaching license. And that's good. He should. Well, it's only a small amount. Come on. No. It's not about that. It's about the principal. And you know who said this? The principal himself. When I say principal, I mean P-R-I-N-C-I-P-L-E. It's about the principal, meaning it's about the values, okay? And the principal is the man himself who's a principal of the school. That's P-A-L. But anyway, that's not the point. I wasn't trying to do some kind of pun there. It just kind of happened. But either way, the point is that, you know, 75 cents, $1.25, he was stealing, okay? And it's not even something, I can't even relate to this. This is not like some kind of urge that I can even understand, to, you know, to save a few cents. I mean, you know, I guess anybody tries to save money, especially if things are tight. I don't mean tries to be dishonest, by the way, but, you know, we can all understand, you know, trying to basically save money and tighten your belts on certain things because life is expensive, I mean, you know, even in Japan, but, you know, not just in the United States, you know, but that's not the point. The point is, like, to save 50 cents on a few cups of coffee, really? That's bizarre, but either way, it seems that they chose not to indict him, but they're not compensating him, and they're not giving him his pension or whatever. But what's incredible, so there's an automatic machine, but somehow he took advantage of the machine and poured himself a bigger coffee. I don't know exactly how that works, but I guess they use the honor system, whatever. Either way, what I like about this story is that the principal didn't, like, write it off. He didn't, and maybe this is a Japanese cultural type of thing, but he took full responsibility. He took ownership of it. And he told that to the kids. So, you know, he could have gone and said, oh, come on, you're being so petty. You know, how can you do this to me? How can you fire me? He didn't say that. You know what he said? He stood up before his students and he apologized. And he said, my job was to set a personal example for you, and I failed to do so. 75-cent coffee. He took a coffee worth $1.25. Good for him. Again, I don't approve of his actions. Obviously, I don't condone what he did. But at least he stepped up after the fact and owned up to it and set a good example at that point. So, you know, and I think a lot of people do not do that, especially in the United States, especially American politicians and a lot of the powers, people in authority in the United States. So maybe it's a Japanese thing. I don't know, but I thought that was impressive. I wanted to share it. Not impressed with him. He did something disgraceful, but he owned up to it. And he, you know, that's, and that's something I think that deserves, to be praised. That's going to do it for today. And we will see you next time. Oh, and stay tuned for the Matt Gaetz testimony, the Matt Gaetz questioning of Robert Herb.
The chair now recognizes the gentleman from Florida. 5 minutes.
February 8th, the White House. Question, Mr. President, why did you share classified information with your ghostwriter? The president, I did not share classified information. I did not share it. I guarantee I did not. That's not true, is it, Mr. Herb?
That is inconsistent with the findings based on the evidence in my report.
Yeah, so it's a lie is just what regular people would say, right? Yeah, all right. So the next one. And all the stuff that was in my home was in filing cabinets that were either locked or able to be locked. That wasn't true either, was it?
That was inconsistent with the findings of our investigation.
Another lie, people might say, right? Because what you put in your report was among the places Mr. Biden's lawyers found classified documents in the garage was a damaged open box. So here's what I'm understanding, right? As Mr. Armstrong laid out, you find in your report that the elements of a federal criminal violation are met. But then you apply this senile cooperator theory that because Joe Biden cooperated and the elevator doesn't go to the top floor, you don't think you get a conviction. And I actually think you get to the right answer in that. I don't think Biden should have been charged. Don't think Trump should have been charged. But under like the senile cooperator theory, isn't it frustrating that Biden continues to go out and lie about the basic facts of the report that lay out a federal criminal violation?
Congressman, I need to disagree with at least one thing that you said, which is that I found that the all of the elements were met. One of the elements of the relevant mishandling statute is the intent element, and what my report reflects is my judgment that based on the evidence, I would not be able to prove beyond a reasonable doubt to a jury that that intent element had been
right,
met.
But the reason you have that doubt is the senile cooperator theory, the fact that Joe Biden is so inept in responding that you can't prove the intent, which, again, I don't quibble with that conclusion, but it's frustrating to be like, oh, well, this guy's not getting treated the same way as Trump because the elevator's not going to the top floor, so we can't prove intent, while at the same time Biden goes out there at the White House and says, well, you know, he just blatantly lies. And what I'm trying to figure out is whether or not Biden's lying because he's still so senile, he hasn't read your report, or whether it's a little craftier and a little more devious and perhaps a little more intentional than we might otherwise think. So I also want to go to this Biden Penn Center. Like, did it give concern to you that the Biden Penn Center, where all this classified stuff was being mishandled, was being floated by foreign governments?
Congressman, we were concerned with getting to the bottom of all of the classified documents that were recovered during the course of our...
Yeah, but what bothers me is that the money that was paying for the place where the documents were being inappropriately held, it was the Chinese and it was other foreign countries. Did that play into your analysis? Did you look into the $1 billion in foreign funding sources at the Biden Center at UPenn, for example?
Congressman, we conducted a thorough, impartial, and fair investigation, and we were very, very concerned with getting to the bottom of all the relevant questions relating to the recovered
documents. Sir, did you look into the fact that the Chinese were floating the place where this guy was keeping the documents unsecure? Yes or no?
Congressman, to the extent that we identified evidence that was relevant and significant to our investigation, we put it in our report.
Okay, well, it seemed relevant to me, maybe not to you. Another thing that seemed relevant to me is this ghostwriter, right? So the ghostwriter purposefully deletes this evidence that seems to be, like, show culpability of Biden's crimes, and you don't charge him. Why did you not charge the ghostwriter with obstructing justice and deleting evidence?
Well, for a number of reasons that are laid out in the report, but in brief, Congressman, yes, when we interviewed the ghostwriter, he did tell us, and I'm trying to get the exact language, that one of the things on his mind, one of the things he was aware of, was that I had been appointed special counsel and was conducting an investigation.
Right, so he didn't, just so everybody knows, the ghostwriter didn't delete the recordings just as a matter of happenstance. Ghostwriter has recordings of Biden making admissions of crimes. He then learns that you've been appointed. He then deletes the information that is the evidence, and you don't charge him.
That is reflected in the report, and one of the reasons...
Like, what does somebody have to do to get charged with obstruction of justice by you? If deleting the evidence of crimes doesn't count, what would meet the standard?
So, Congressman, as we state in the relevant chapter of the report, one of the things that Mr. Zwanitzer did not delete was transcripts of the recordings that he had created that included inculpatory evidence relating to Mr. Biden.
Oh, so if you destroy some evidence but not other evidence, that somehow absolves you of the evidence you destroy? Here's what I see. Zwaniger should have been charged, wasn't. Biden and Trump should have been treated equally. They weren't. And that is the double standard that I think a lot of Americans are concerned about. I see my time's expired. I yield back.